Welcome to the Sino Rican Podcast. Today we're going to be discussing the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view in WWE. I am Cyan of Flame.
And I'm Strawhead Regan.
Thank you for joining us. So before we actually discuss each of the individual matches that occurred in the pay-per-view, we just kind of wanted to talk about what Hell in a Cell is, how that pay-per-view came to be. So what we had with Hell in a Cell is it's an oversized cage match. So they put a full chain link cage around the entirety of the ring, along with about, what'd you say, about 4 feet border outside of the ring?
Yeah, it's the entirety of the outside barricade, right? It touches the barricade outside of the ring, so it has to be a good 4 or 5 feet.
Yeah, it's pretty much right up to that barricade, actually, now that you mention it. I never noticed that before. I thought you could walk around it on each side.
I think it hits, or maybe it is a little bit before, because in some matches it just seems like it's bigger, but I think that was in the old ones, so maybe not so much.
It pretty much covers all the way through the steps and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Where a normal cage match, it drops right onto the apron of the ring and everything, and the Hell in a Cell gives you some outside playroom and everything. So it's a huge cage match, and then anything goes inside of it. They kind of, you know, stock it with the weapons and everything, so you're going to see all sorts of weapons being used, as JBL would call them. The toys get brought out in there.
Which is really weird and perverted.
Calling them the toys?
Yeah, I don't like that. I really don't.
It seems like something that JBL would have said, like, in any time frame, though, and everything.
Sounds like something King would say in the 90s.
I don't know. King in the 90s, I think, would just be, like, waving around adult pleasure toys and everything.
And throwing them into the ring.
Like, bring out the puppies in this into the ring.
Oh, man.
Because he had no filter back then.
Seriously.
You were able to just completely decimate your opponent and everything. But for the longest time, the Hell in a Cell match was the culmination of a feud. Like, the worst thing that you could do to somebody that you were
feuding with,
that you had, you know, problems with, was bring it to Hell in a Cell. The best reaction, in my opinion, ever to a Hell in a Cell match being announced was in Mick Foley's Last Chance match, where he revealed that he was coming back to his Cactus Jack persona, that Cactus Jack was returning.
Versus Triple H.
And he screams to Triple H, and Triple H says, you know, like, any match you want, however you want, you name it, I'll beat you for the title. And then you'll be retired and you'll be gone. And Mick just looks at him. He's like, Hell in a Cell. And you just saw, like, Triple H's, like, face just drop.
Yeah.
And everything. And and that's kind of like what forever to me is Hell in a Cell. That's still my favorite Hell in a Cell match.
Right.
But not
the Taker Foley fest.
Not the Taker Foley one. That's a great match. And I mean, good God.
It's more of like an execution
Mick Foley's
than it is a match.
Survival stuff.
The passion of Mick Foley.
Pretty much. Like, I'm surprised he wasn't set on a crucifix and, like, burned and stabbed and
seriously,
all sorts of things. But holy hell, he went through a lot in that match. But his match against Triple H was just a really great match all throughout the entire thing. And it still had some insane high spots as well. I mean, he still fell through the roof, I believe, and then, like, crumpled into the thing and then got pedigreed onto the thumbtacks at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Brutal.
At least this time they planned out ahead and, you know, they had the fall.
That it was,
like,
supposed
the
to
ring.
Fall through the
right, like, in the ring. Remember, he fell in the ring and the ring, like, sunk. So it was, like, you know, it was padded for so he wouldn't die, basically.
Yeah, so that he wouldn't suffer kind of more teeth going
tooth.
Through his nose, through his lips. Jesus, that match is just so brutal to watch the original one, the Taker. But kind of my point that I was making about it was that the match was brought out as the final thing. It was Mick's final chance to not only win back that title, but just end things with Triple H.
Yeah.
And you got that response that, like, Triple H balked at it at first in that kind of cowardly heel mentality, but then immediately was like, if I go to this place, it ends for you in more ways than just retirement type thing. So it was a huge culmination, everything. You don't really get that. You can't organically have the feud come to that and then be like, oh my God, I have to go into Hell in a Cell against this guy. When there's a pay-per-view 3 weeks around the corner that's just called
Hell in a Cell
and everything. So you kind of lose that aspect. Other side of the spectrum, I love that they just have a pay-per-view called Elimination Chamber.
Right, because
that's an event. That's like the Royal Rumble. Like
I think the Survivor Series
where it's building to something.
I think out of all these gimmick pay-per-views like TLC, Hell in a Cell, what's the other one that's gimmicky? I know there's another one, I just can't think of it right now, besides Hell in a Cell, but,
Bank? Are you talking about Money in the Bank?
Because that one, I would prefer if that went back to WrestleMania. It seems like, to anyone who's never seen, like, a Money in the Bank before, it just seems weird that the time limit that they have is until WrestleMania, when the pay-per-view Money in the Bank is, like, not... It's not near WrestleMania. Like, this is, like, what? Like, 4 months away from WrestleMania, usually? Like, it's during the summer, right? Like, before summer.
Money in the Bank is, like, 2 months after WrestleMania. I think it's June.
Yeah, so instead of being...
So you get, like, an eight-month run to cash it in.
Right. Whereas before, it was, like, the logic was that you won the Money in the Bank at WrestleMania, because it was a WrestleMania event match. And then you had until the next year, you know, before, because the logic was that someone at the next WrestleMania was going to get a Money in the Bank, so there couldn't be two walking around, which hasn't happened, and I'm hoping that it happens.
There
like
kind of has been two.
Yeah, but the
because of the Raw and the SmackDown time.
Right, but I'm talking about with one champion that hasn't happened yet, and I need that to happen. I need that to happen.
Double cash ins type thing.
Double cash or just two people with the briefcase. Like, if you're gonna keep Money in the Bank, put it back in WrestleMania so we can have the year mark. But if you're gonna do it at its own pay per view, they should get rid of the time limit. I think the time limit is insane right now to have it.
Well, really, no one to this day has ever held it the full year. So I mean,
another thing I need to see.
The time limit needs to go away if they're not gonna like exploit it to be like this is my last day. Like if Seth Rollins does that and everything, he's like, for a full year, Dean Ambrose has ruined every single point where I was able to cash in my Money in the Bank. So this is my last opportunity is at WrestleMania to use this cash in and everything that I could get behind and everything. But I do agree to some point that it should go back to WrestleMania because I loved it at WrestleMania. And that back then when they had the split titles, you could use the WrestleMania one on either belt you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
When it was split and there was the two Money in the Bank matches and with those two Money in the Bank matches, you had to go after a specific belt. I thought that kind of weakened it a lot.
Especially when they would openly treat like the World Heavyweight Championship as like lesser than the Intercontinental Championship. So I think that hurt that title quite a bit, and the people who were involved in the Money in the Banks for that title, because people knew, like people could see through it, like the illusion of it being an important title was destroyed. Like I think the year where Daniel Bryan and Sheamus opened WrestleMania was a big hit. I know, like, it was supposed to be, like, this moment where it was shocking, but I think it hurt where it was in the card.
Are you talking about the 18 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
The make out with AJ and get kicked in the rope kick?
Right, like, I think that if that would have been, say, put in the second-to-last match, I think it would have had more of the effect that they were looking for, which was, you know, the shocking championship win, but because they put it as the opener, it just felt cheap. It felt
that
really,
was the
really
show
cheap.
Opener? I thought that was like three or four.
No, that was the show opener. Go watch that WrestleMania again. Wow. That was the show opener.
Is that what's 29?
I believe it's 20. Is it 29 or is it like
28 or 29? 20.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't 27.
Yeah. No, not 27. But yeah. That was my big problem with that. That was my only real problem with that, with what they did with that title. That they cheapened it to the point where, like, you knew the title did not matter anymore.
Well, I think titles in general
don't matter as much as they did.
This we can touch on a little bit later, but I think titles in general, the Intercontinental title, the U.S. title, and everything, aren't having that prestige and everything. You used to have that point where if Macho Man was the Intercontinental champion and Hulk Hogan was the
world
WWF champion or WWE champion, you could just look at the roster and go, like, Hulk Hogan's number one, Macho Man's number two, and everything.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, at biggest argument, you would say Macho Man's number three, because whoever's fighting Hogan for the world title
should be number two, exactly.
And everything. But it wasn't like right now, if I looked, not in like a favoritism or like performance or ability or anything, like not a pound for pound ranking, but like, of the way they're booked, like, who's the strongest guys? I mean, you would have, you know, Brock Lesnar, John Cena in that, like, 1-2 spot.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't be number three Dolph Ziggler or number three Rusev. It would be,
right, exactly.
Like, Rusev would be, like, 8 and Dolph Ziggler, you know, 7 or 9. Like, pretty down the list. It definitely wouldn't be that
Rusev, Brock.
That next guy. Rusev, Uchka.
Well, but yeah, so that's kind of like our take on the whole handles, like the Hell in a Cell being like an event, and I don't know, I don't mind having gimmick pay-per-views, which was the whole point of this, but I really, like you said, I don't think I like the idea of it being scheduled, like, the way it is.
It's,
I think it should
work
be more
for Hell in a Cell. I get your point that you, that. And I agree with it, even that I like Money in the Bank being at WrestleMania. I can see Money in the Bank as a tentpole pay-per-view, like, that everything is building to Money in the Bank. I can see everything is building to a summer, to a Survivor Series, that everything is building to a Royal Rumble, an Elimination Chamber, all of those, like, big prestige matches. But with TLC and Money in, and, not Money in the Bank, but TLC and Hell in a Cell, it just doesn't organically lend itself to the feud and everything. And,
right.
And then, like, you'll occasionally have a Hell in a Cell match at SummerSlam or at WrestleMania, and it's always bigger, and you're like, well, the fuck was
it? Like, shouldn't this have been, shouldn't this have been on a pay-per-view called Hell in a Cell?
There was no point for the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view because of that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, And when you talked about Elimination Chamber, I think you hit a point where, I think that's, out of all the events, that is, like, the new one where I feel it can be its own pay-per-view, and it could be its own event, just like Survivor Series is an own event, how Royal Rumble, it's its own event, you know, and all these matches. But that one doesn't bug me at all, that, because it has, I actually like that Elimination Chamber took the spot of No Way Out, and No Way Out traditionally didn't have cage matches, so, like, the No Way Out theme never really, like, played out. But with the Elimination Chamber, you could have kept the name No Way Out and had the Elimination Chamber match be always on it, and it would have made all of the sense.
I actually was sad when they changed the name to Elimination Chamber, because I thought No Way Out was a perfect name for the Elimination Chamber event, but it's just easier to market as Elimination Chamber, so I understand why they would change it, and I agree with it begrudgingly. it was WrestleMania 28 for Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan, and it was the actual live show opener.
Yeah,
They did have the tag team titles match.
The tag team title,
like,
was the dark match.
Pre-show.
Pre-show, and then when the show opened,
wow,
this was the first, like, if you did not YouTube, if you did not WWE, like, in this case, if you didn't have WWE Network, and you were just watching this, like, you paid for the pay-per-view, you're $60, and you saw that match, because a lot of people came to that pay-per-view, like, you could see signs where I traveled from New Zealand to watch Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus, and it's like, oh, God. Like, it's not even close to the main event, bro.
I know that poor person who is just a Hurt. Huge fan.
Yeah, and there was a lot of those. There was a lot, and you know that. That's
well,
when,
I mean, even back then, we already had the Yes chants going.
Mm-hmm. The Yes movement, the Yes like the fans chanting Yes with fear, you know, like with that fervor that they do it, you know, where it feels like it's a 90 Attitude Era type of chant, started at that WrestleMania. Like, watch every pay per view, watch anything before that WrestleMania, and then get to that moment when they're opening the show. And just look at that stadium. Like, they're crazy. Like, he was crazy over as a personality, as a wrestler, and with the Yes thing.
And, you know, watching that match and remembering kind of the fallout from it, because AJ was such a big thing. AJ was huge.
Yeah, this was in the middle of her,
like right before she became the general manager of Raw and everything. And she was really big in that role. It's kind of weird to see. I mean, she's still great, and she's doing good work, you know, working with Paige and everyone else as Divas Champion right now. But when we get to that match, we can touch on it a little bit more. But it's kind of funny that she was the, like, A woman, number one on everything.
Oh, yeah,
and,
she was
so
number
big,
A. And
so over. But
yeah, she was number one in the Divas division as far as, like, the Diva to be and in, like, the guy storylines. Like, he was over everywhere.
Yeah, just huge, and it was just her being crazy, and it's kind of funny that they're not using that as much.
Yeah, they've kind of downplayed it because now they're trying to sell Paige as the crazy one, and somehow as an extension, Alicia Fox. I don't know where that came from. It just happened. Like, she's crazy now. It's like, all right, like, this is what we're doing now.
Alicia Fox screams really well, so I think that's the only reason that
they're
going for that, is that she has that crazy lady scream.
The hats, too. Like, the way she wears hats, like, for some reason, just looks like she's demented.
I've never noticed that.
Yeah, like, watch when she wore JBL's hat, and I think she wore, like, two more hats after that. But yeah, she looks like she's seriously, like, demented.
All right. So anyways, that's kind of a lead into Hell in a Cell in general and everything. I still loved this pay-per-view.
2014.
I'm still liking it, but the 2014 Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, we're going to start going down it match by match, kind of discussing the things that happened in there, expected fallouts and everything, how we lived up to our own predictions, if we were able to call the matches correctly, and sort of given our overall feeling of each match. So it opened with a dark match, Mark Henry versus Bo Dallas. Bo Dallas had been beating Mark Henry week after week after week, kind of driving home that Mark Henry is terrible and everything, and that he had all those problems.
Ever since he lost to Rusev.
Ever since he lost to Rusev. And Bo, you know, he believed that he could beat him. what happened here, Regan?
Oh, it was a squash. Absolute squash. Like, Mark Henry just destroyed Bo Dallas. Like, did he just, like, pick him up and slam him and that was it?
Total runtime was 36 seconds.
Yeah,
it was two World Strongest
Was it
slams.
Two? Okay, yeah. Like, it was so quick. Like, I was like, this is it. And I remember thinking, because I think the match happened right before the pay-per-view started. Like, they were going over.
It was the dark match, yeah.
Yeah, but it was like, normally when they do the pre-shows, they call them the pre-shows, and normally they have a match, like, and it's like, what, however long, like, you know, 15, 20 minutes. And then they have, like, the pre-hype to the pay-per-view. If I'm not mistaken, they had the pre-hype of the pay-per-view throughout the entirety of that hour, and then they gave in, like, 10 minutes. They did the match, and then they went back to pre-hype before the pay-per-view started.
Yeah, they're not kicking off the pay-per-views, the actual beginning of the pay-per-view itself, with the same kind of fanfare and, like, explosions, fireworks, sing the national anthem, all that. Like, that's all on the pre-show now and everything, and I think that's part of really pushing the network. I think they need to really kind of go back and see what works for a pre-show, because the pre-shows have been really disappointing for the last couple pay-per-views.
Yeah, like, they've been...
SummerSlam was great, but after SummerSlam, just...
I remember the first pay-per-view, or the first pre-show I ever saw was actually the WrestleMania we were just talking about, the one with Daniel Bryan. And I remember that I was kind of mad, actually, because the pre-show match was the Usos versus Primo and Epico versus another tag team. I think it was a three-way tag team match.
Yeah, it was,
Who was that
there? Justin Gabriel and Heath?
That's right. No, it was Justin Gabriel and what's the other, was it Airborne?
Maybe it was Evan Bourne with him.
I can't remember. All I remember was watching that match and going like, why is this match so good? Like, it was a really good three-way tag match, which those are rare to begin with. Like, those don't happen often.
Mm-hmm.
And then they announced it that it was happening at WrestleMania. You're like, oh my God, this is going to be good. And then, you know, there were the pre-show and it was a good match, but I think it deserved to be in the actual card, like the stuff that people, you know, paid the money for, not the pre-show.
I personally think WrestleMania, you should have all of your titles on WrestleMania.
Yeah, exactly. And like, it was a title match. It was a tag team
title
match.
Yeah, it was the tag team championships and everything. Yeah. And those should be all part of the actual show of WrestleMania. Like, if the only two that have every single title that the company has on the line are WrestleMania and Night of Champions, you know, so be it. That's just kind of the way of the business now. But they should all be on at WrestleMania. I kind of like that they're... you know, redistributing the wealth of championships a little bit. I think it's kind of slowly rebuilding to that value. Like
the old system, instead of having like 10 titles. Yeah.
You know, whether it's, you know, just their plan was this and they're going to use Brock really effectively in the 2015, or, you know, it's Brock playing hardball and he's kind of being a dick with it. I'm not sure, but I know I'm hyped as hell for when I get to see Brock Lesnar again. Like Brock Lesnar. Like when you have a whole two pay-per-views go by and the world champion's not on there and everything, when that one does come up, it matters. And it's kind of boxing style in that way. You only see every like 6 months you get to see your boxing match.
Yeah, it's not only like boxing / MMA style, but it also is like the old, and I mean old, wrestling way, where, like, you know, like when Bruno Sammartino was champion, but he was only defending like once every 2 months or something like that, you know, like he wasn't defending like at every house show or anything like that.
Well, some old wrestling mark is going to try to tell you that, you know, Bruno Sammartino wrestled 7 days a week and twice on Sundays, and the title every single time. But yeah, sorry that you're... glasses are so tinted with roses, but
yeah, for real. Like not the case at all. Like wrestlers
like
back in the day,
wrestled, but he didn't put that belt on.
Wrestlers back in the day did not wrestle the schedules. Like they, I mean, they had, especially like during the if they were hopping territories, and yeah, they had like a crazy schedule, kind of like how wrestlers do now. But if you were like a territory guy and you never moved out of that territory, then yeah, you barely wrestled. Like you wrestled like once every other week.
Yeah, pretty much. Because I mean, it was, you know, a traveling show throughout those territories and everything. It wasn't kind of the way that it seemed like, especially not today. I mean, these guys, that's
travel. Yeah,
that's a travel. That's a schedule, man. Because you're, you know, even if you're not wrestling every single show, like you're still on the road. What, 300 days of the year?
Something ridiculous. It's something gross. Like, every time I hear a wrestler talk about their schedule, I'm like, you guys don't get paid enough. Like,
yeah,
they don't. I really don't think they get paid enough. Like, especially the lesser card guys.
Yeah, I mean, even though they're, you know, pulling in, you know, 100K plus and everything, like, that's a lot of days on the road, man.
Yeah.
But
hey, you know, whatever. At least... at least some of them can afford it, you know, like Cena, Henry, you know, Big Show have their own buses.
I mean,
does Ziggler?
They can have buses.
Does Heaven, and I guess we should talk about Ziggler versus Cesaro since, you know, we're mentioning him. Did he, as an Intercontinental Championship, like, does that even mean anything as far as, like, your pay / travel accommodations?
I'm not sure. They don't really say much as far as that. I think it has to be in your contract. I think the belts are merely ornamental or something like that, because
yeah.
I know when Daniel Bryan was World Heavyweight Champion, when he beat, was it Mark Henry for the belt?
Kane.
Was it Kane that he beat? It was either Big Show or
Are you talking about his first time?
The first time.
Yeah. Okay, never mind.
I know that that didn't suddenly bump his, you know, yearly salary, you know, exponentially or anything. I mean, he probably got some sort of, you know, title bonus or something, but I think it's just kind of pay-per-view bonus that of the take that they're able to divvy out like that. I don't think that there's some sort of, like, bonus for being the Intercontinental Champion. It's just sort of the responsibility of, like, make sure you don't lose that belt. So.
Yeah, that's something I guess I should probably take one day to, like, ask, because JR answers questions on his blog, and I think his podcast, too. Like, and I should ask him about that, because he's mentioned in his podcast that he was payroll, I believe.
He was payroll.
WWE. Yeah, so he knew exactly, like, he knows exactly, like, what gave you more money, like, you know, if you were drawing, like, if you were part of the main event, like, you got, like, an extra, you know, like, there was a percentage that they divvied up for, like, referees or whatever it is. Like, he mentioned some of these things, and I started thinking about, like, someone like Dolph Ziggler, and I was like, is he, as an Intercontinental Champion, getting anything? And does the stuff that happened in Hell in a Cell, like, reflect, like, his pay, you know, something like that, where...
I don't think so, and I mean, I don't think it can be like, you know, boxing or MMA where you get a higher purse if you win.
Like, since everything's, exactly.
Since, you know, scripted and all that.
Right.
But, I mean, it's an interesting idea if they did, but I think that would just be too much kayfabe if they actually, you know, they're all like, all right, we're going to give you this belt, and along with it, a temporary raise.
Because we creatively chose to make you the champ. Like, what?
that would just be weird. I mean, if you carried that belt and, like, you made it mean something, like, you changed it.
If you drew, you know, if you were drawing audiences.
Like, you know, like, Cena... 2005, when he took the belt from JBL, making nearly as much as JBL. But, you know, come 2007, when it was probably re-up time, totally different, you know, amount of money and everything because of what a monster he became.
Yeah. Now, so what did you think about the Ziggler and Cesaro, by the way?
So, I did predict it right. I did say that Ziggler was going to win. I think actually on our last episode, I said that it was going to go Ziggler, Cesaro, Ziggler, and, it was just too straight for Ziggler, which is very weird for a 2 out of 3 match.
We've discussed that Cesaro may or may not be well liked backstage. He might be. Yeah, you know, he might have issues with the people that run things. So I think, I don't know, like, it seemed like in the beginning of the year, you kept reading that Cesaro was going to mean something. And, like, he was doing the rounds, you know, he was doing the media rounds and appearing everywhere. And when they did the European tour, you know, he was obviously, like, one of the main people that would be presented because, you know, he can speak all these languages, et cetera, et cetera. He wins WrestleMania, he wins the Andre the Giant thing, they make him a Paul Heyman guy. I mean, all these things that happened to him in, like, a span of 5 months. And now it's towards the end of the year, and here he is going 2-0, you know, and he's the 0.
0-2, yeah.
yeah, going 0-2 in a 2 out of 3. Like, when...
Right after losing for the other belt, too.
And what, like, I don't get is, when was the last time there was a 2 out of 3 falls where, like, it went 2-0. Like, when was the last time that happened? Because I have no memory of that happening. I'm sure it has.
It wasn't that long ago. I remember somebody went 2 straight in the last 2 years. I want to say it was Rey Mysterio did a best 2 out of 3 and he went 2 straight. But just off the top of my head, I can't tell you exactly when it was.
So, like, I really liked the match. I mean, I liked the spots that they had. I liked that the big swing sort of, like, appeared out of nowhere. Not quite RKO out of nowhere, but I just don't understand, like, why go 2-0. And the inner smart in me wants to be happy because, you know, Ziggler, we've bitched and moaned. Like, we want Ziggler to have, like, decisive victories, you know, like, and mean something and be treated, you know, better by creative because he busts his ass. And he does. He busts his ass, like, when he's out there. Like, he's a great wrestler and entertainer.
Did you not love that kind of breaking the fourth wall speech Triple H gave about Ziggler when they were pushing him on Raw after Hell in a Cell?
Yeah.
Oh, like, my God, like, that was amazing. And it was, yeah. Like, you bust your ass. You work as hard as, if not even harder than John Cena. But what's going to happen? He's going to get all of the credit and everything.
Exactly.
And I swear to you, like, I love the way it is because it's giving Ziggler that point to where he can be like, I can fight the man too.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, Triple H is kind of right in a weird form of way, because it is going to end up being that Cena's the hero when his team ends up winning at Survivor Series.
Right, exactly, yeah. Like, that's the story. Like, he's going to come out looking like $1 million if his team wins. Like, his teammates won't matter.
Exactly, and all it does is it makes me think of Maven years and years ago, probably like 10 years ago, when Maven was offered, when he won Tough Enough and he was offered the chance to join Evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And instead he was like, no, I'm going to fight Triple H for the title. And there I was, you know, 14 years old going like, Maven, you're not going to beat Triple H for the title. Join Evolution, man. Like, trying to like make the guy go into the heel just to be like, I want you to have a career, dude.
Right. Like in that weird, like it's still real to me, damn it.
I was 14, but
I know,
and it is still real to me. Still real to me. But Ziggler, it was a good match. Kind of what you were saying, that we want Ziggler to have decisive wins. I kind of had the feeling that it wasn't really even that decisive of a win. It kind of made both guys look weak because Cesaro couldn't get a win, and both of Ziggler's wins were kind of roll-up-y.
Yeah.
Like, his first one was a straight roll-up. The second one, it wasn't like he landed, like, the Famouser in the zigzag and pinned his ass.
Like here's...
He landed it and he got another roll-up. Like,
here's my problem. Like, look, like, Rusev versus Big Show lasted 14 minutes, right? Ziggler versus Cesaro, and a 2 out of 3 falls only lasted 12 minutes. This should have been, like, a 26-minute match, at least. At least with a 2 out of 3 stipulation on two guys that you know can work. Like,
I agree.
Cesaro can work an hour match. Like, Dolph Ziggler can probably pump out an hour match if they have to. So, like, give him 30, like, give him 20 something minutes. I don't know. Like I said, I love that Ziggler got a decisive victory over someone finally, especially something like a 2 out of 3. But I just don't like that it was at the expense of Cesaro. Like, if it would have been someone
really
like
hope Ziggler
or
gets,
the Miz, I wouldn't have cared.
I just really hope Ziggler gets like 3 eliminations when it comes down to it in the Survivor Series match.
Oh, like him actually winning, like, for his team, like, actually scoring pins.
I don't care if he gets the final scoring pin, but I hope that he, like, is responsible for eliminating like 3 guys, like, throughout the course of it.
Yeah.
Like if he's like the Kane Royal Rumble situation where like he's just like destroying everybody and throwing mm-hmm. everybody over the top.
Or but isn't he, it but isn't it Roman Reigns now?
Too. Well, it is Roman that? Reigns now. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. The Roman Reigns. Oh my God. There's going to be kids like 20 years from now that are going to be saying like, yeah, like Roman Reigns, like he's probably gonna have the record for like a couple of years, and he's gonna be the guy that people talk about. Like,
how
Matt
many
Kane.
Guys was it? The 13?
14? 13? 15? Some number like that. It was a lot.
So, like, at 50% almost of the total mm-hmm. entrance and everything, just yeah. Roman Reigns. Like, that's yeah. insane.
Exactly. Like, they were, I mean, they've been saying that he is the chosen one.
Speaking
like,
of Roman Reigns, they gave that huge WWE Network, you know, breaking news announcement when mm-hmm. when he was revealed to be injured and everything, that he was going to be out. But it was just sort of a little pop-up on WWE.com when they revealed that Bray Wyatt, but Bo Dallas had been injured. Like, there was no big announcement. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
I get that Roman Reigns is bigger, but I think if anybody's injured, like, throw up breaking news and have, like, a real quick thing. Like, you know you have cameras on them anyways. Like,
right, exactly. I think, I don't know. It's just strange. Like, and that's why sometimes it's weird. Like,
they care about all the wrestlers.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it shouldn't matter like what pecking order it is. Like, if someone's injured, like if you're selling it as if it's like a real product, which sometimes they still do. Like when they're all like, "Ladies and gentlemen, you know, like do we have breaking news? Such and such got a concussion, and it's real." Like, if you're playing everything like real, you should do every injury, like every single injury, because like you don't see like football. Like if it's like a random person in the team, like that's not the quarterback, like you don't see them go like, "Oh, number 18 got injured, whatever." Like,
yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah, they don't just dismiss it. I mean, they'll spend like half the broadcasting, you know, going like, "Oh, you know, we're checking on his condition," and it could be a nobody and he becomes a somebody because of that.
Yeah, like so, they'll have that care for it and everything. I thought that was kind of a disappointment. So that did remind me of that situation going on, that kind of favoritism pecking order and everything. So I thought that kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Have you ever seen that document?
Which document?
There's an actual document. I've seen this more than once, and JR or Steve Austin confirmed like that it's a real thing. It's a roster, right? Like a roll call roster, and it has every wrestler. Then they're divided by heel and face. Like that actually says, you know, here's your heel, you know, baby faces, heels. And then it literally has a pecking order. And it said, I think the word pecking order or something like it is in it. And it puts people like, you know, here's your top baby faces, John Cena. And at the time, I think Orton was number two. And then, on the other side, you had like CM Punk was your top heel. And after that, I think it was Ziggler, you know, and Vicky Guerrero. And like, they have like a pecking order. Wow. And it was spot on. It was spot on. Like this, it exists and it's weird.
I've never, that sounds like some horseshit right there. Like,
no, it's real. Like, God, I remind
me. No, I'm not saying that, like,
that it's fake.
That it's fake, that it's a lie. I think that it's horseshit that something exists. Like that would exist. Like,
yeah.
I completely believe that it would. It's just sad mm-hmm. that it would.
Yeah, when I first seen it, I was like, oh my God, like, it's real. And it looked very, it looked almost like a roster I remember seeing in the military where you had, like, your rank on top, and it said, like, you know, this is such and such, and then, like, these are the people below him. You know, this is such and such, and this is the people below him. Like, it had, like, almost like a military look to it, and I was like, huh, that's really interesting that that exists in the WWE.
That is interesting.
So,
all right. So, Dolph Ziggler versus Cesaro. Did you also pick that Ziggler was going to retain?
I think I said, yeah, because I remember we were talking about I didn't want the hot potato effect to happen.
Yeah.
To the title, so, yeah.
Yeah, so little
does very much that, against Cesaro
that
winning.
It didn't have back and forth. I didn't think that either guy really got to look strong because of that, but the way that they're pushing Ziggler finally now, the way that it appears to be on Raw, I'm very happy about. So looking forward to Survivor Series being a really good show and having a good showing for Ziggler. The following match was Nikki Bella versus Brie Bella. The loser becomes the winner's personal assistant for 1 month. And if they choose not to be the personal assistant, they are fired.
Now, did I mention last time when we spoke of this how much I did not care for this story?
I don't think you did. I know that I said that if you have a stipulation like that, you are telling your audience flat out that the heel's going to win.
Yeah, because like, you can't
there's
imagine.
There's no way you can have a good person telling
right, because,
the other person.
Because then they would come off heelish in doing, you know, I don't know. Like
no matter
yeah, like,
what they make them do, they're going to be heelish because they're having somebody be their assistant.
Yeah, I don't. I didn't care. One, I didn't care for this match to even, like, happen. Two, I didn't care about how the build-up for this has been, because it has been, like, main event-ish mm-hmm. building. Like, this was always, like, an hour closer or, like, a show closer, you know? And
a couple
I don't think... Yeah, I don't think it ever deserved that type of billing. Like, I'm glad that Brie Bella and Nikki Bella don't suck at wrestling anymore. Like, they're actually, you know, better than
they
were.
I'm actually really impressed with Nikki. I mean, Brie, mm-hmm. I always thought was the better wrestler.
Right, and then Nikki. Yeah, Nikki kind of like.
But Nikki, like, she's definitely, like, bulked up. Like, she's gotten really strong. So when she does that, what do they call it for her? The rack attack?
Is that what it's called?
I think that's what they're calling it as her move. I mean, it's you know, just a dropping backbreaker and everything. And she drops it, she sells it really well, and then the other person sells, you know, taking it well most of the time. But I think they're calling it the rack attack, and that just has this weird feeling every single time I hear it, because it just makes me think about, you know, her implants. But yeah, she drops it and everything, so, like, she's gotten, you know, a lot stronger, and she's moving through and doing kind of these big drops and everything. Definitely getting some improvement from Bree, even though she was already kind of the better one, mm-hmm. but having some good hip tosses, good arm drags, kind of going for that.
Being married to Daniel Bryan has to be, like, effectively help her, you know, with her career.
I mean, he can just, you know, break down points in matches for her to win mm-hmm. and everything. I still don't like necessarily the whole, like, I'm married to this person, so I use their move thing. Like, I never liked...
Oh, yeah.
I never liked when Stephanie would use the pedigree.
Yeah,
and
I get it. Like, as if they would inherit the power level to, like, make them move better.
Like, I don't like that Brie does the yes lock and everything, mostly because the yes lock's a really freaking scary-looking move. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm afraid somebody's actually going to get their arm broken when they're in
it. Right.
I mean, you know, if somebody, you know, inherits, like, Charlotte doing her father's figure four, that makes sense, because A, she's good at it, she can lock it in really well, and it's kind of an homage to her father. But,
yeah.
You know, like, something you've never used in your entire, what's she been with the company now, 8 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, like, the 8 years you've been in the company, you've never once used, suddenly that's your move now, just because you're married to the guy. It's just weird to me.
I'm not. That would be like, yeah, you imagine if, like, Nikki started doing the attitude adjustment?
I think
about that for a second.
I started thinking about, I actually, you know, since Shinsuke's gotten stronger and she does a good, that good backbreaker, I think she could drop a good attitude adjustment on people. It would just be really weird to watch.
Yeah, it'd just be strange.
I hate calling it... I freaking hate the name attitude adjustment.
Attitude adjustment,
so much.
FU, yeah.
Well, I mean, I completely get it that they wanted to get away from the FU name. But, like, couldn't they have had a better one than attitude adjustment? Because I remember when Cena was forced to join the Nexus and he had to, like, obey Wade Barrett's commands.
Mm-hmm.
And Wade Barrett yelled at him like it was gonna be, like, the biggest destruction and everything. But, like, if you were commanding Triple H and you're like, Triple H, give that man the pedigree, drive him down or something like that. But he yelled out, give this man an attitude adjustment right now, and it just sounds like somebody's being scolded, like they're being sent to the room, like,
attitude
adjustment, mister.
Yeah, like, it sounds like a high school, or, like, just a really elementary school thing.
It's just stupid is what it is.
Yeah.
what's even stupider than calling it the attitude adjustment is when Michael Cole says, oh, the AA!
Is it calling it the, oh, yeah, he
just calls it the
AA. AA. Yeah.
Thing, like.
Double A. You know what? Double A would have
been.
Double
A I could take. I think double A sounds
crazy. Yeah.
I'm not talking about Arn Anderson.
Double A.
But yeah, like, if I heard double A, I'd be like, okay, but the AA, no. But anyways, it was a surprisingly decent match. I don't know that it necessarily needed 6 minutes. It probably could have gone a little bit less. Nikki
could have given...
It was
given 3 of those minutes to Cesaro and Ziggler.
Really, they could have given all 6 of those minutes and, you know, just said, like, by the way, Nikki won, and nobody had to watch it. But, but yeah, of course Nikki was going to win. That's the only way it could have gone. It wouldn't have made sense any other way. I did really like the ensuing later on in the night, the smoothie.
Yeah.
Smoothie moment. Oh, that smoothie was for you, and you made it wrong.
Yeah.
And, like,
drop.
Like, just total drama bullshit and everything.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm kind of curious if they're going to, because it's this weird setup of WWE angles that they use in Total Divas.
Mm-hmm.
In the show, I don't know if you watch the show, Regan, but
once in a while I'll dabble. Like I'll watch like half an episode, and I'm like, all right, I'm out. Like I'm too deep in the rabbit hole.
I like it. It's got some entertainment for me, but it's weird because they'll use some of the feuds and storylines that are going on in there, and their kind of real life implications in there. I'm kind of wondering if they're going to do it, but it's also weird because Total Divas is like always like 6 months behind because it's filmed. So
You're
experiencing WrestleMania events like now type thing. So I'm kind of wondering if they're going to touch on how this affected them in that show. I think that would be an interesting thing to follow.
Mm.
But the fallout for it, funny. The next match, kind of the same thing. I mean, we kind of had already seen everything that we needed to of Nikki and Brie, and then it had a match. I feel like I've seen everything I need to of Golden Stardust versus the Usos.
The Usos. Like, can we...
I'm just done. Like,
yeah, like, it seems like they should... Why can't we... Why did the... Jimmy and Jey Uso were feuding with, like, the Wyatts, and I know the Wyatts, like, got, like, a weird repackaging that's not really a repackaging. It's more like a reassessment of, like, their story, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the Wyatts.
Yeah, like, the Wyatts are the same characters. They're just, like, they have to, like, go away and, like, you know, find Jesus or something. Like, I don't really understand
what they're doing. Luke's, partially a good guy now, and Rowan talks now, but he came back creepier.
Right, so, like, there was a change of dynamic, but the characters are essentially still the same. And I don't understand why the Usos can't be, the Usos could still be feuding with them, or, you know, we could, since Goldust and Stardust are kind of tweeners, I don't understand why the Wyatts can't jump in there. And then, what was the other tag team that's been involved against them? Because, like, they've dismantled the tag team division, you know, either on purpose or because of
injury. Well, it used to be Ryback's, but, I mean, Ryback's done now that Ryback's back and doing his solo thing.
So I just don't know. I really don't think Jimmy and Jey Uso versus Goldust Stardust, like, it can last any longer. Like, that has to be it, you know.
I'm kind of sad that they busted the Mark Henry Big Show thing into the versus angle already.
Yeah, that was quick, huh?
Yeah, it was really quick, and I mean, of course, that's where it was going. Like, as soon as they started being friends, everybody was like, well, they're going to feud.
Right, exactly. That's an obvious feud.
Just because it's the Haas versus the Haas type thing. And,
yeah, and I mean, as soon as they put one of them against Rusev, I was like, they're breaking them up. Like, that's done. They're both going to lose to him because that's the long game story that they've always had in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Rusev has to be beaten by someone who's bigger than anyone in the roster. So it has to be like a Cena or, like, you know, a returning Roman Reigns or, like, someone who is, like, the epitome of, like, who the good guy is within, like, the universe, you know, of, like, the roster.
Their own self-contained universe. I would have liked for them both to have lost to Rusev, and then at least just 1 month, and then at Survivor Series, have Golden Stardust versus Mark Henry and Big Show for the tag team titles. And then when they lose, they kind of both blame each other, and then it finally explodes type thing. A little bit of a longer build for them to break out, and a real statement win. Like, because no matter how many times they job, like, just because of their size and what they can do and what they have done in the past, beating Mark Henry and Big Show as a tag team, like, means something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, beating the Usos again, or even if they do, you know, beat the Wyatts or anything, it doesn't mean quite as much. They need to beat some good singles people that are matched up. Like, if they went back and they still had, like, the Real Americans or something like that, if they had Cesaro and Swagger, that would be a team that would be kind of a statement win for them.
Hmm. I'll preface that.
I don't want Cesaro to team with Swagger again. I want Cesaro to stop acting like a tool in all those interviews and start getting, like, better pushes.
But, yeah, because creative, obviously, someone back there doesn't like him, or he doesn't like someone, and it shows. Because this is a guy who it looked like he was going to have, like, this really big year, and this year has been nothing but a dud for him.
It has been nothing but duds. It's just false starts.
Yeah, yeah. And there you go. Yeah, like it feels like he's caught. If he feels like the guy that's on a bike, and you know they're just hitting that pedal, and you think okay, like they're gonna leave, like they're taking off, right? Oh no, it's stalling. God damn it! Like they're still here. Like that's Cesaro. He's still in the parking lot trying to get his bike to run, and it's not happening.
Pretty much. But Golden Stardust versus the Usos. Golden Stardust won again. It wasn't quite a clean finish because it was Stardust kind of kicked the legs out of Jimmy Uso or Jey Uso, whichever one it was. And then Goldust got the big pin. I don't quite know. Maybe you'll disagree with me on this. Maybe it's just my Stardust Markedism. But I don't know why it seems like Stardust never gains the pin. Like, whether it's on Raw, SmackDown, or at a pay-per-view, he never gains the pin, but he's always the frickin' fall guy. You got that feeling? It just totally feels like that to me.
I don't know if your Cody Rhodes marked them as getting the best of you, because, like, I haven't noticed. I'll have to rewatch matches, like, to see it. Because you know how sometimes, like, in wrestling, you miss the big picture because you're watching everything in segments, like, you know, Monday and then, you know, main event or whatever, and then Friday and then the pay-per-view. So maybe I haven't looked, maybe I haven't looked at the big picture. Like, I'm going to start looking into that. And next week, you know, or like whenever we talk about him again, like Goldust and Stardust, like I'll let you know what I think. Because
on Monday, on a Raw, like, it was the Usos and Ziggler versus, I think it was like Miz and Golden Stardust, and like who took the triple super kick? Stardust.
You're absolutely correct.
And then Stardust, you know, he lost a singles match against one of the Usos on like main event, and everything. But like every single time, like he's doing all the cool shit. And he's, like, making the match pop because he's all crazy and doing his extra stuff, like, on the sidelines. Like watch him on the sidelines of the match when they show him, and he's doing, like, Mizdow levels of weird crap outside on the sidelines. Like, he'll be peekabooing the audience with the star and all sorts of stuff. He's very, like, 80s-style outside-of-the-ring crowd-getting. Not doing it as well as Mizdow. I'll give him that, just because Mizdow's gimmick is funny as all hell. But but kind of weird on that. But hopefully this feud is done. I'm done with it.
I'm done with it. The next feud that has been going on for who knows how long. This has been going on for like 10 years, it feels like.
And you know what? People complain against it, and I do not know why, because I could watch John Cena versus Randy Orton till the end of time. Like, they are the feuds for each other. Like it makes me wonder if these same people who say this consistently said the same thing about Triple H versus Mankind or The Rock versus Austin and everything.
Oh, like people...
Those, like, destined feuds and everything. Because you look back at Rock Austin, like, WWE Network actually did, like, four different retrospectives on that feud. Like, that was the feud of these two guys. And it went on from... God, Rock Austin was from, what, 97 to 2003? So, 6 solid years of them fighting against, like, just each other, pretty much. And I don't remember any people going like, wow, I really can't watch another Rock Austin match. But they say about Randy Orton and John Cena, and I don't know if it's just because of the social media, like, letting you have that more out there.
It's the social media aspect that we're more aware, because, I mean, we as wrestling fans are more aware now than we were in the Attitude Era. There's no fucking going around that.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, I do think that the fact that this is a 10-year feud that's been going on versus, like, Rock and Austin were only active, what, 5 years?
I wouldn't quite say it's a 10-year feud, though, because that would mean
back
to 2004. They didn't have their first face-off till 2007, as far as WWE terms. I mean, I'm not counting OVW.
Right. It's just, you know, they've feuded quite a bit, like, on and off. On and off, mostly.
Really, it was, like, two matches in 2007, and then Cena got injured, and then it was 2009 at SummerSlam, and then they had about a year program through 2010 SummerSlam.
Right.
And then I think there was, like, one or two matches in, like, 11, 12. They didn't touch each other for 13. So, like, we haven't seen this match for about 2 years.
Yeah, I think it's just that, you know, the fact that they've had feuded before for long periods of time. And, again, it's been all these, like, segments that have been happening. Like, people are just tired. Some people are just tired of Cena. Some people are tired of Orton. And some people are tired of both. Like, you know, me, I'm on the tired of Cena camp, but I love Randy Orton. Like,
he's on such a hot spiral right now,
mm-hmm.
Just because of those RKO out of nowhere videos on Vine and everything.
Yeah,
and hilarious.
That and, like, his character as of lately has been a really nice tweener without being... He's a tweener in the sense that he doesn't pander the audience. He's still acting like a heel.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's placed against heels that he doesn't like, he looks like a hero. But he's not. He's not acting like a hero. He's still a heel.
Which is kind of what Austin, it's very Austin style, because Austin was never doing it for the fans. Austin was doing it because he just didn't want to listen to Vince McMahon.
Yeah, but remember, Austin would say, like, anyone who wants me to see kick like Vince McMahon's ass, give me a hell yeah, you know, so there was, like, a little bit of pandering. Randy Orton never does that.
That's true.
Even when he's a good guy, he never panders. His character is always about himself.
That's true.
Which is why he's such a great heel, and that's why when he's a face and he tries pandering, which he, you know, they've tried doing that like once or twice, and it just sounds unnatural. He's just not a natural good guy. Like, he should always be a heel that's put in positions where, like, he can be over as a hero character but still being a heel, or just, you know, just be a heel full flesh.
Mm-hmm. The thing I thought was funny was I actually listened to a review of this match, and kind of the vibe for the whole thing was, I've seen Cena versus Orton. I don't need to see it anymore. It was good, but I didn't like it because it was Cena versus Orton again. And then they followed that up by saying, but it has to lead to Orton versus Rollins and then end with Orton versus Triple H. And that just made me go, hold up, you just complained about Orton versus Cena for the 1,000th time, and you're going to bring back the, like, 3-year feud of Orton versus Triple H that they had more matches? Like,
yeah, and that, like, no one agreed. Like, everyone agreed that the feuds were good, but the matches themselves were not that great. Like, the feud has, like, they have a great built-in story, like, Orton and Triple H. Like, I love the built-in story that they have, but, like, every time they're about to have, like, a big match, they never quite deliver. Like that street fight that they were supposed to have at WrestleMania,
mm-hmm.
that was, you know, sold as, like, really personal, like, oh, you know, like, I'm gonna kill you for doing this to my wife, blah, 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 and, like, then they have a clinic of a match, which is not a bad thing, but, like, shouldn't it have been two guys trying to kill each other?
It was weird, and they painted themselves in the corner with all the rules that they added to that match.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they had other matches that were really good. I mean, the cage match that they had in 2008 was crazy awesome. That one was a really good one. And they're back-to-back. They had two matches for the title at No Mercy 2007. Those were incredible matches. They had the regular match, the Triple H one, and then they had the last man standing at the end of the match that Orton won the title back. They kind of piggybacked the title twice in one night. Those were really good.
Hmm. Yeah, and like I said, they have some good matches.
They have great matches against each other. It's just, I don't need to see Like, if we're going to talk about I don't need to see matches again, I don't need to see Orton Triple H more than I don't need to see Orton versus Cena. Because Orton versus Cena, they click so perfectly together because they grew through the business together. And they have, you know, some form of relationship with each other. I don't think, you know, they go home and high five and think they're best friends. But definitely they work much better together. And this match, holy hell.
Yeah, it was a really good. I know this probably. I think you were saying this is your favorite of the two Hell in a Cell matches.
Of this night, this is in my top five Hell in a Cell matches ever.
Really?
Yeah. For me, mm-hmm. This one is so much better than the Hell in a Cell match that they had
at the end
2011. No, it was Orton versus Cena in a Hell in a Cell match a couple years back. I want to say it was 2011, maybe 2012.
My memory is not, like, clicking with that.
They definitely really had one, and Orton won the last Hell in a Cell match by giving him the punt.
Oh, that's right, okay. I remember now you were telling me about that. I need to just go on the network and get that. Just watch that. For $9.99.
You mean free.
Oh, that's right. It's free this month.
For the month November. Of November. Including Survivor Series.
I know. I like how they're like, why would you pay full price? I love that they're screaming.
They just shit all over anybody who decided they were going to order it on pay-per-view. So dickish.
Like, how dare you pay $50? You're a schmuck.
You're such a fool.
Yeah, like that's pretty much how JB. I think it was JBL that said it. Like, who would pay $30 or $50 for something you could have gotten for $9.99? That makes no sense to me. And I'm like, don't shit on your own fan base. Like, what? Like, what are you doing? Like, I understand. Like, they're trying to sell a product. I get it, but you can only skirt, you know, around that line so much before, you know, someone gets like, hey, like, I paid $50 and you're talking shit to me? Like, you know, especially, like, the people who still take wrestling, like, too serious, like, you know, the guy who was crying and covering his kid's ears during the Rusev match.
Because like, he didn't want to hear the Russian anthem.
The Russian anthem, yeah, I was like, wow, like, that's xenophobic as fuck.
Oh, God. Xenophobic remarks for Rusev. Oh my God, I love the fact that since it was a network-only broadcast for the U.S. title match of Rusev versus Sheamus, that we just got full mic on, like, those people in the front rows being like,
yeah, go
back to Russia, Rusev.
Yeah, and it's
go
like, he's
Russia.
Not from,
your
he's
vodka
not from Russia.
Stinks. And it's like, wow, we're going with vodka?
Yeah, like, they're...
By the way, Orton versus...
Cena.
Versus Cena in the Hell in a Cell was the main event of Hell in a Cell 2009. So
okay.
Exactly 5 years later, they met again at the same
in a Hell in a Cell.
In a Hell in
okay.
a Cell match. But that
and
one
I'm okay
was
with
won
that, because, yeah, because, again, I really like the match. The only problem I have with, like, I have no problem with the booking of this pay-per-view. Like, top to bottom, I think it was booked perfectly. Like, the match orders were perfect. Like,
yeah,
I
it had some great peaks and valleys all throughout it.
Yeah,
it started off with a big one. It kind of tapered down, then it came up huge with the Hell in a Cell, then it tapered back down, and then it came up huge with the clothes show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know this wasn't like your favorite of the Hell in a Cell matches. I enjoyed it. I just don't like who won, because I really think that Randy Orton versus Lesnar would have been a nice middle feud to have, because, like...
Oh, just because I love the match. Just because, like, the match as a whole, I try not to let the end, like, just the who won take me down. Sometimes it pisses me off. And
right.
I mean, this one did piss me off because I thought it was, like, Orton's, because, like, everything about it should have been Orton. I mean, Survivor Series is in his hometown and everything, and he's probably going to have...
Yeah, like, you would have thought, like, that would have been such a great pay-per-view, because, like, that would have made you think, like, even me and you, who, like, we know that there's no way Brock is losing that title until after, or until WrestleMania. Like, we know we would all, like, we're 100%, like, it's not going to happen. We would have been, you know, a little concerned, like, oh, shit, Randy might win.
Yeah. But, like, if Lesnar doesn't have another title match until Royal Rumble. Like, some people are talking and everything. They're saying he's not going to come back for a full match, and he's just going to kind of do promotion in between those. If mm-hmm. if he has the match at the Rumble, and then, you know, that's Cena, then he's got to fight Randy at Elimination Chamber, because it's going to be, you know, Roman Reigns or whoever else is the star ready to be made at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Because I'm wondering if it's going to be the person who wins at Royal Rumble instead wants to use it early and face at Elimination Chamber. Kind of like Cena did when he won.
How great would it be if we're going with that? Since Roman hasn't come back and he's not scared. When is Roman scheduled to come back? Royal Rumble?
I mean, they're saying at earliest him being back would be January.
So Royal Rumble. So how great would it be?
I mean, if he's back at Royal Rumble, he's got to be number 30 and then throw somebody out after, like, you know,
right, that way, you know,
minutes in the ring and he's not, you know, getting hurt or nothing.
And he can still recover and do, like, you know, two, three months of, you know, recovery, like, while he's back to be ready for WrestleMania. But how great would it be, like, if Seth Rollins, like, catches in and, like, after having dealt with Ambrose, because we don't know where the Ambrose story is going, since we're so, and we'll talk about that when we get to the Hell in a Cell match between Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. But how great would it be if Roman Reigns screws Seth Rollins, like, during a match against
Brock Lesnar. Comeback?
Yeah, that'd like, the, yeah, make that the comeback, like, full circle. Like, he screws Seth Rollins out of his title, which, you know, undoes the whole screwing of the Shield, so there's that full circle. Mm-hmm. But then you have Roman Reigns being, like, the guy that's going to take on Brock Lesnar, because he just got rid of, you know, the guy that screwed everything for everyone.
Man, that'd be good.
I really, really would like to see that. Like, if we're going with your scenario where, you know, Seth Rollins cashes in.
So you think Seth Rollins cashes in as kind of a the way he's attempted to cash in and kind of the mm-hmm. Edge style,
where yeah.
he's capitalizing on a situation.
Yeah, and then Seth Rollins comes.
Or when he finally does it and it goes through,
like,
is it going to be like an RVD or a Sandow situation?
No, I'm thinking
sets the match just from the beginning and he fights a guy fresh.
I'm thinking, like, the main event of the Royal Rumble is, like, Brock Lesnar versus somebody. Like, I don't care who. Like, Randy Orton. Let's put Randy Orton, since we want that to happen anyway. And let's say Randy barely, you know.
Randy Orton, but okay.
Yeah. Randy barely beats or
barely loses.
Barely loses. So, like, you know, they have, like, a long match back and forth. Brock is kind of tired at the end. You know, maybe he's taking an RKO or two, which makes it, from a ring psychology side, like, his head is injured, so, like, one curb stomp, he's done, right? So Seth Rollins comes out, you know, catches in, goes for the curb stomp because Brock is, like, dazed and confused, and, you know, like, he's taking, like, 50 RKOs. Maybe he's taking one after the match. And as he's about to stomp him, Roman Reigns comes out of nowhere and just fucking punches him. Boom! And, like, it's done. Like, Brock falls over Seth Rollins and beats him. And then that's, like, you have Roman Reigns just completely screw him out of it.
It feels, I don't know why, like, imagining that, it reminds me of the Goldberg, Eddie Guerrero thing over Brock
Lesnar. Yeah. The one, I have no problem with that, because I actually really like that moment when Goldberg did the assist so Eddie could become champ.
Mm-hmm.
Except here, you know, the heel is the one benefiting from all this.
Except he's taking it from Seth Rollins and,
right.
helping the guy wins. Who he's about to beat in the future, type thing.
Exactly. Yeah, and it helps everyone, because, like I said, it closes the Shield screw storyline, because by then Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins are probably going to be done. It closes the chapter for Roman Reigns, closes Seth Rollins away from the title chase for WrestleMania, so you have Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, and Seth Rollins can just do something else, like, during that little time period.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think everyone would win in a scenario like that.
Yeah.
But enough fantasy booking. Like, we should probably go to Sheamus and the Miz.
No, but that could definitely be good. Touching on the actual aspects of the match of John Cena versus Randy Orton first, though. Lots of great spots throughout it. Some solid wrestling. It was very much a straightforward wrestling match that happened to be in a cage. Rather than necessarily like all the chaos and everything, they did bring out, you know, the chairs and the tables and everything, and they used them very effectively. Like when Randy, you know, drove Cena through the table that was in like the corner and everything, and like Cena like banged his head into the turnbuckle like on the way to the table and everything, and was just driving him through all sorts of stuff. It was really good setup. Another damn punt was teased and everything and made me sad because I wanted to see Cena get his head kicked in again. Great RKOs. I mean, holy hell at the long two counts and the finishers. I think it was like four apiece that they each took. And I mean, some people were talking that
We're not going to mention the RKO out of nowhere from the shoulder tackle.
Oh, that was
good.
Great.
Lord.
Yeah, and I mean that's the kind of thing that you get, and the little nuances that you get in Orton versus Cena is that you're so used to watching a Cena match, and Cena's going to do his, you know, his moves of doom that people complain about. And
the five moves of doom, but Orton
go
will like counter
normal.
Them.
Orton will always counter them and everything. And it seems like he's the only one. Like Cena did his first shoulder tackle. Orton fell down from it. Then he went for his second shoulder tackle. And while he's like old doopy in the air, Orton catches him, RKOs the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And
which I almost thought was going to be the finish if it wasn't for the fact that there was a table. I think the tables were already set up.
The tables are off on the side and everything. Yeah. There was another RKO that, no, it wasn't an RKO. It was a drop
kick. From out of nowhere.
It was a drop kick that Orton did. But, table was up. Cena throws him on the shoulders. He's about to attitude adjustment, him through the table. And Orton, while he's on the shoulders, knocks the table over and then pops off the shoulders and hits the drop kick.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And it's just such a smooth form and everything. Like, I think Orton is kind of one of the smoothest workers working currently. I mean,
when he decides that he wants to be sharp, he can be really sharp.
Yeah, he's precision.
It's not like Angle or Benoit, like his crispness, but when he wants to be, he can be. Like, case in point, his the running power slam thing he does.
Oh, it's great.
Like when someone comes from the ropes and he grabs him and he does that really slick, really fast, like just smooth power slam that he does, or a scoop slam. It's a small scoop slam, right?
It's a power slam. It's not a running power slam. Running power slam was British Bulldog's finisher.
No, no, yeah, like, they run to him.
But
like,
they're running, and he does a counter power slam.
Yeah,
but
it's just so fast sometimes. I'm always scared that one of these days he's gonna like make a mistake and like
break their neck.
Yeah, because it's so fast that I mean they're putting a lot of trust on him to do that move.
Yeah, he does it really well. I mean, Goldust sometimes does it too.
Yeah, but his is
a little slower.
Very much slower. I mean, it is like it looks like it's slow motion compared to Randy Orton's, which is strange considering that the biggest complaint that Randy Orton always gets is that he works a slow, methodical style, but he has moves that are really fast. And I think that's part of his ring psychology, and people just miss out on the fact.
Well, that's the interesting thing is that he's going to, you know, coil
he
up.
Builds to
he's
it,
gonna,
yeah.
He's going to choke you down in that, you know, headlock and everything, and it's like, oh no, the rest lock type thing. But, like, he's holding it down, and then you finally get out, and then boom, spring, RKO, boom, spring, drop kick. Boom, spring, power slam, you know, all sorts of things. I mean,
yeah, he has a nice tempo, which I really think a lot of people they misconstrue his tempo for, oh, he's lazy, oh, he's slow, oh, he's methodical, and it's like, he knows what he's doing, he understands how to tell a story / have rhythm in the ring, which a lot of the younger guys, you know, and I have partially a fault that I like matches where they're spot fest sometimes, and Randy Orton's not about spot fest.
I fucking hate spot fest.
I'm okay with them.
And we'll talk about my anti-spot fests throughout this.
Well,
but
I know it's happening in about four matches.
Oh, yeah. But the next match was Rusev, I believe.
Rusev. Was it Rusev or Sheamus versus The Miz?
It was Sheamus Miz first, yes.
Yeah.
Sheamus versus The Miz. This match pissed me off because these are two world champions. Like, these are two former world champions fighting for a title that should still matter. And
but it doesn't.
the majority of this match was comedy. And I think credit, there's a place for comedy.
Credit where credit's due for Damian Sandow for, like, just owning up to this whole missed out gimmick, which...
True.
Which it would... I want to believe... Remember how they had him just be different people for the longest time? Like, his gimmick was that he was always dressed up as someone.
Yeah.
I want to believe that this was building up to this, but I really think this was just something that happened organically, where it's like, oh, well, he's been doing this, let's just pair them up. Like, I want to believe it was pre-planned, but I don't think it was.
There's just been so many times where somebody is, like, going through pretending to be all the other wrestlers. I think Big Show even did
it. Yeah, Big Show had it. Oh, yeah, Big Show, because mostly because he could imitate people. Like, he was good at impressions, apparently. Like, or someone told him that he was good at impressions. And he believed it, and I was like, no. Like, you're not.
I thought that Sandow had a lot of really good... impersonations that he did do, and I mean, his Miz is great, and him doing all the different
what was the superhero all the different he did?
Like rest locks that he would do, like when Miz is getting ready for the skull crushing finale, like Sandow will be on the outside of the ring, like, arms back, all waiting for it and everything, and kind of follow everything.
Yeah, and then I love when he falls with him. That's my favorite thing,
and I love that, and I like that as the stunt double thing, but like. Other weeks, we've seen that he's working as the heel associate to The Miz, and he's going to, you know, run in and take a hit to save Miz from taking it, like a stunt double. Or he's going to, you know, be like the Virgil on the outside and, like, trip up the other guy or distract the ref to help Miz. He was such a goddamn distraction to Miz that, like, and pulling away, like, Miz had the pin roll up and... That's when Sandow was distracting the ref.
Yeah.
So like, he actually kept Miz from the win and everything. And, I mean, Sheamus ended up reversing it, and he would have gotten the win after that. But kind of the timing that he did it didn't make sense for Sandow to start distracting. And then you have him, you know, just standing there playing marionette as, you know, Sheamus is playing with Miz's dead body, basically. And then he's just going to play there and then, you know, fall down when Miz gets the shit kicked out of him. It just pissed me off, like, so badly. I love this gimmick for the Miz, and I think that there's so much more they can do with it, but, like...
I hate that they're aware
eventually going, like, this gimmick's drying up really fast.
Yeah, like, I hate that they're already, doing the breakup story. Like, it's like, I just got used to seeing, like, I just started getting used to the comedy bits of, you know, them too, and like I really, really, really like Damon Sandow in this role, and it's it's almost over.
And I mean, I have this, you know, dichotomy where I want more of this, but I want it to be used, you know, in the standard way while he's being funny. But at the same time, I also have that feeling where I would really like for Sandow to get pushed and get that, you know, singles credit that he deserves, that he should have had originally. Like, he was Money in the Bank. Like, he had a title match. And
he had a good title match with Cena.
And it was a really good match against Cena, but right after that, he lost, and it was like, what are you doing with Sandow?
I don't understand how you can have a good match with Cena in a main event and have, like, people... like, have a crowd reaction, and creative then go, like, okay, cool, like, let's put you back where you were. Like, let's ignore that happened. Like, well, I don't understand that. Well, I really don't.
See Ryback, see Umaga, see...
Yeah. Well, Umaga, like... Umaga was a character that was never... Because Umaga is kind of like where Koslov is, where Great Khali, where... not Sheamus, I guess, not yet. Rusev, I know it's going to happen. Like, you know it's going to happen. Where...
I'm
just
hoping,
like,
Rusev
really
is
going to
be Goldberg done right, where it's not going to fall apart once he loses. I still think it probably will, but
I predict
it doesn't.
I predict, I'm telling you right now, Rusev is going to become a comedy character before he gets future endeavored. You can put money in that if you want. Like, he's going to become a, he's going to be, it happens to every, look at the last 10 years of WWE. Look at every single, heel character that was like a foreigner, like Great Khali, Kozlov, you know, Umaga, all that. And look what's happened to their careers, barring, you know, them dying or getting fired for like politics or something like that. Like if they stuck around, they became a comedy character at one
point. But none of them had either of these two things. None of them had the camel clutch, and none of them had a mouthpiece manager like Lana.
Umaga had Armando.
Armando Alejandro Estrada?
I was a mark.
Alejandro Estrada was a joke. Like,
I was a mark for him. I was
my name is Armando Alejandro Estrada.
How funny is it that they had a dude from Iraq or whatever playing a Hispanic guy, and then like Muhammad Hassan was like an Italian guy playing a heel from Iran or whatever.
Well, like Daivari wasn't even Indian, was he?
No, he was from, not Indian, but he was from the area where they were portraying him to be. He was legit from there.
Oh, was he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Daivari was very much from there. But Muhammad Hassan was from, like, Detroit.
The Great Khali says he would like a sandwich. No. No,
Alejandro
but
Estrada.
But yeah, I think we're done with Sheamus versus The Miz and everything. I aired all my grievances. Did you have anything that you wanted to throw on there?
Yeah, here it is. Daivari. Like, I had to look this up. Like, Daivari was born in Minnesota, but both his parents were Iranian, who came to the United States in the 70s. So, like, he is straight up, like, Iranian. Like, yeah, he was born here, but from Iranian parents. Like, so, yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Now, again, Muhammad Hassan was just an Italian dude from, like, Detroit. Like, straight up Italian. But.
Well, I mean, what's her name that plays Lana? Like, she might be Russian by ancestry, but isn't she from, like, Florida or something?
She's from Florida. I don't think she's anything. I don't think she's. What is she?
Are we just saying white people have no culture? Like,
no, like, you know,
they're nothing.
She was born in Florida. It says. Oh, never mind. She was raised in the former Soviet Union and speaks fluent Russian. Oh shit, she was raised over there.
I knew she spoke actual Russian because, like,
Rusev Braka.
She's definitely actually talking.
Wait, she's in movies?
And I think that Rusev really only has a very limited English vocab.
She's in movies.
Oh, what movie was she in?
They're a horrible movie, but she's in Big Mamas, like Father Like Son, Big Time Beach Party, Pitch Perfect, Soul, Pitch Perfect 2. She was in, she has a couple of TV show appearances in The Real Housewives of Atlanta. In 2009, The Millionaire Matchmaker, The Game, The Fresh Beat Band. Fresh Beat Band, what? I can't watch that.
Dude, I fucking hate Pitch Perfect so much.
Yeah, well, now you have one reason to,
to hate it even more.
Yeah. Rusev Bratka.
Like, I just hope Pitch Perfect 2, her role is to just be all like, I hate all of this a cappella. Rusev, crash! And he just,
let me see.
Kicks Anna Kendrick in the throat.
It says in Pitch Perfect who she was, footnote number 5, opening Bella, and then in Pitch Perfect 2 it says a legacy Bella. Like, I don't even know.
Oh, that just means she's like some sorority broad.
Yeah, like, it doesn't matter. That's funny. But anyway, their match, I don't think I could care less. I really, because I told you already that
great indictment of the match right there.
Well, no, yeah, like, we're talking about the manager more than we are about, like, Rusev and Big Show, like...
I actually think, you know, like, Rusev's very new to the business. I mean...
Super new.
I think he came straight out of Dev, like, within a year. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't floating in NXT very long.
Right. He immigrated from Bulgaria in 2008.
Wow.
And went to become a wrestler. Like, before that, he was just, like, a power lifter, and I think he did, like, something with boats. Rowing? I think he did rowing or something like that in school. And that was it.
Yeah, so, I mean, big on him for, like, all the work he's done, and I think he has good matches. I mean, I have a lot of respect for him in his matches. He had that match set with Jack Swagger, and he sold the ankle the entire match and everything. Like, the ankle lock got picked, and he got put into the ankle lock, injured his foot, and his whole thing is on that big, you know, super kick. I know you hate calling it the super kick, but I'm not going to call it the sweet chin music, and there's no other term for it. Like, thrust kick, I guess. Only other term, like...
The Bulgarian super kick.
Well, it's still the goddamn super kick.
Yeah, I know, but like calling it Bulgarian would just sound like evil. Like,
that's racist.
Right. It's Bulgarian super kick.
The Russian foot stamp.
I like how they still call him, like, you know, the Bulgarian brew, the super athlete. Like, they never call him Russian anything, but people are still convinced that he's from Russia.
No, they do call him, Russia's hero, or...
Yeah, Russia's
the hero of the Russian Federation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
of the medal.
Because apparently fucking Putin himself gave him
medal.
Gave him a medal,
yeah.
I just expect that Vladimir Putin has, like, sent out, like, memo after memo being like, this man is not affiliated with me at all.
I just don't understand how, like, they think in their little weird, like, they call it the WWE universe for a reason, because it does work like the Marvel 616, where...
Oh, absolutely.
Like, they say these things that happen, like, you know, Obama met Spider-Man, like... And they had adventures, and it seems like it's the same way here. Like, Rusev totally got a medal from Putin, you know, like, in this universe, in this version of reality, that happened. But for us, like, us living in, you know, the real world, we're like, no, you can Wikipedia that, and, like, that never happened.
It's like,
like, CNN would have
covered
that
shit.
Yeah.
You didn't know about this? That Obama was almost replaced by the chameleon until he was able to KO the chameleon with a straight right punch. I'm like, wait a second, you're saying, like, the 45-year-old president of the United States was able to knock out a goddamn supervillain?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you know, oh, and Randy Orton came and RKO'd the Thing out of nowhere. Like, no, like, this is not... None of this is happening. Like, I love that they have their own version of reality, but there's certain things that, politics-wise, like, I think they shouldn't touch. And this is, like, one of those where stop saying that Rusev gave him a medal. Because, like, we all know it's bullshit. Like, we all know it's bullshit. Like, unless you're going for, like, again, the people who are so in their own bubble of, like, you know, they're xenophobes like that. And they're like, oh no, I can't let my kid listen to the Russian anthem. You know, like, if you're that type of person and you buy into it, then, you know, like, whatever. But
I like it because of the way Putin is. Putin is such a stoic, and he's very much like Stalin, which is scary as fuck. Yeah.
He's very much a supervillain in a movie.
He's very, you know, just stone faced. And so, like, that picture when they plastered it up there, like, it just kills me every freaking time when Lon is like, my hero, Vladimir Putin, and everything. And you just go down the entire line of it and everything. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily have the same feeling because, like, while Putin is equally crazy for, like, the setup for it and everything... It's not like a Kim Jong-un or something like that. Like, I would feel weird if, like, they were throwing up a picture of, like, a Kim Jong-un for, like, some badass like Asian star or something. Like imagine if they did that shit and like Hideo Itami was like villain and he came in along with like Lana and they start doing like the Kim Jong Un picture, like that would just have a totally different feel. As is, I like the Putin vignettes. They work for me. They grab me just right. They grab my America love. Make me go, America. No, but
boo this man. Yeah, but
boo this man, because
at least they stopped. Remember when they were trying to demonize Putin, which is really easy. Like that's easy. Like whatever. But then they were trying to. I can't remember. There was a wrestler that was trying to say, like he was trying to get on the Obama, like our president is Obama, like, not Putin. And, like, he was trying to hype up Obama, and it's like, you guys not realize that, like, most of your demographic is, like, people who don't like Obama. So, like, that was the worst thing you could have done, because, like, half the people hated, or everyone hated Putin, and then, like, more than half, like, 90% hated Obama just as bad. So I was like, oh my god, like, this crowd reaction is his murder to the segment.
So. Yeah. Depends on where you are, but yeah, it was really funny. And I remember what you were talking about, and it was when they just randomly were like, okay, he's going to be fighting against Rusev, so Swagger and Coulter are heroes now. And and so it was Coulter, this guy who had been like bashing America by being pro-America, suddenly in support of the president. So it was like this double feeling of like, mm-hmm. some people didn't like Obama already, and then it was like, Zeb likes Obama, now I double dislike Obama, so that's twice the boos.
Like, I think people were very confused. Like, it was just, and they should, it was be just very so confused. Weird.
They should be confused until Kurt Angle returns to the WWE and defeats Rusev. Because if John Cena is the one who does it, brother, I'm pissed off, man.
It's gonna be Cena. I guarantee.
It's probably gonna be Cena, but it needs to be. They need to freaking give Angle a WWE contract.
I was reading
one last
something.
Run. He needs
I was,
to.
I was and, reading something today about like not them not wanting. Kurt Angle, and I don't remember what the reason was. Like,
and I'm hoping that's just like kayfabe cover, and like really they're penning the deal right now. This is just me, you know, holding out hope for, you know, my favorite wrestler of all time returning to, you know, a place where it's actually watchable television. But yeah, doubtful. I'd put it at like 10% possibility. Yeah.
But anyway, whatever match, and I think I was kind of. I wasn't whatever at the next match. I was actually surprised that
AJ and Paige?
Yeah, AJ and Paige was actually a decent match for the Divas Championship. Like, I actually was very surprised.
Every match between AJ and Paige has been...
Well, I was surprised because, I don't know, so for some reason, like, I don't know what it has been about, like, their feud. Like, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I think on TV it doesn't work, but, like, on the pay-per-views they step up their game and it just works. Like, both of the girls.
The video package that they had the previous month, where.
The one with Paige.
Where Paige was, you know, just going all crazy and talking against AJ, and I think it was Nikki was in the match that month. And they had that great three-way, was built up a lot better than this month's. I didn't think the build-up and the kind of story towards this month was done very well, but the match itself was a good match.
Yeah. I thought it was a really good match. Like, better than I was going to give it credit to be. And, again, that's why I was saying earlier, like, in love with the booking for this pay-per-view. Like, from top to bottom, like, the match order and the matches themselves, I like. I might not agree with some decisions, i.e. Orton losing, but I'm not mad enough to be like, oh, no, like, this pay-per-view sucked. Like, I want my $9.99 back. Like, no, like, I was happy with everything. Including the main event, which I know you have strong opinions about.
Well, just because, you know, Orton didn't win, and just because, you know, Ziggler went too straight instead of it being kind of the back and forth and getting a little more runtime, just because, you know, a couple different endings and everything didn't bother me.
Speaking of endings.
but yeah, AJ Page was really good. I liked the... you know, they sold the submission really well. I didn't like that they had the pay-per-view be the point where it kind of ends between Paige and Alicia Fox, because that was barely starting anyways. But I thought that that should have been a Monday Night Raw fallout rather than a pay-per-view fallout. Because it wasn't even anything to do with Alicia being on the sidelines that ended up with Paige being caught into the Black Widow.
Yeah. I do like... I did enjoy, like, the banter at the end with Paige and, like, was she saying, I hate you?
Yeah.
I think that's what she was saying, but it just sounded so weird. And I know I tweeted, like, what I thought I heard, but I can't remember what it was. It's just her accent, like, when she's screaming, it's just hilarious to me. Like, it sounds like she's saying different things. Like, I know what she's saying, but it always sounds like she's saying, like, stuff that doesn't belong in a wrestling world. Okay. So, yeah. It's just, like, I'll look for that tweet later.
All right.
I just think it was pretty funny, like, how the fallout from that went. Like you said, it should have happened like Raw, not the pay-per-view.
Yeah, it wasn't paced right, and it just seemed kind of tacked on for this match. But either way, you know, AJ retained. Hopefully she gets somebody for her new challenger, kind of to make the AJ Page thing fresh again, give it, you know, some breather room. I think Emma could be pushed into a really great feud with AJ in the future. But, you know, however they go with that could be. But to close the show, very historic, first time in about 10 years, I think, they had two men under 30 close the show in the main event for a pay-per-view. Yeah,
for WWE pay-per-view, and, like, that's kind of insane because they have, you know, pay-per-view every month. Like, they have 12 pay-per-views a year, correct? Or is it, like, 11 or 10? Because I know, like, sometimes they have that weird gap between WrestleMania and whatever was before it.
I think they've reduced it to 10 to 12.
Okay.
I think they've reduced it to 12 because it's one a month now. It went as high as 16 in like 2006 or so.
Oh my god, that's way too many. It's
way too many.
Since they were doing, isn't that when they were doing like Raw and SmackDown ones? So it was like two separate brands. So they had like, they sometimes would do two. Like one Raw, one SmackDown in like 1 month. Like, I know that happened once.
Well, what always threw was you would have that, and then Cyber Sunday Taboo Tuesday would always throw.
Yeah, that's right, because those were like random.
Yeah.
Like, especially Taboo Tuesday. That was like so random. Like, let's do a pay-per-view on a Tuesday. What?
Which is weird, because I mean, like, I could see the 16 pay-per-views a year now that the network exists. Mm-hmm. But like, what fans were out there that could afford? I couldn't afford, you know,
I'll tell you right now,
$50 pay-per-view
when
a
I
month,
was in the military,
let alone that often.
When I was in the military and JBL was the WWE champion, I was paying for every pay-per-view that he defended because I wanted to see him lose. I was very invested. Like, that's why I became a Cena mark during that time, because I was so ready for JBL to be beaten, and I didn't even care who beat him.
He was such a good evil champion, though.
Oh, yeah. The Cabinet? God, so oh, my good. God. The Cabinet was great. The Cabinet was the Authority before the Authority was a thing.
Ooh, you know what? That is a very good, accurate assessment.
Yeah.
And I did like JBL's little thing on Monday where he was like, if the Authority wants me, I'll lace up the boots. One more time, I'll come out of retirement, and I'll join Team Authority gladly. And I love JBL's little bits like that.
Yeah.
but we had a show, and it started off, and I'll kind of take it back in time. The week before, we had Rollins and Ambrose were going to face off. We had Mick Foley come in. And kind of, you know, he was speaking to kind of his, you know, spiritual successor. I know you always like to compare Ambrose to Stone Cold for some reason, but I think his absolute, you know, spiritual ancestor is Mick Foley, like with his craziness and kind of devil may care attitude.
Yeah. I think Dean Ambrose, like, I think I said once that he is the combination of, what I said was that he's the combination of Jake Roberts and Mick Foley. I remember I said that once about him. Like, that's who I see when I see Dean Ambrose. Like, he does have, like, a Stone Cold-esque persona, though, like how he's anti. What's that?
The I don't cares.
Yeah, like the I don't care, and like, you know, like the establishment, the authority, whoever, like, doesn't really matter to him. Like, he'll go through it. But he's not, like, defined by that only. Like, he's defined by the fact that he's kind of crazy. And he has really strange delivery, just like Jake the Snake did.
Yeah, but Jake the Snake, like, was such precision and had, like, aces of matches all the way throughout. And he never did something as retarded as being knocked backwards over the in between the second and top rope. To where you're almost falling out of the ring, and then you spring back, and then you come back, and you hit that.
Oh, you're not a fan of the.
I hate that false fallout. That every time I see it is the dumbest thing.
Really? Because I that's my favorite thing that he does.
Hate it. So every single time I see it, I hate it. There's not enough A's in the word hate. For
there's
how
not
much
enough, there's not enough
I age. I despise, like, just hey.
Sound like a valley girl now.
Yeah, seriously.
I hate it.
Oh my god, I do not like when Dean Ambrose does that. But
I can't believe that's the love with that thing.
That spot kills me every
that's
time.
A spot,
cause
that's a spot sense. That I think I've made every one of my, like, creative wrestlers have.
Oh,
like,
my god, I hate you.
Like, before he did it, you know, like, it's a pre-existing move. Like, I think, there was a Japanese wrestler that did it, I think. Or maybe he was a luchador. But I remember seeing that and going, like, that's cool. And I've used it, like, a lot of times. So.
And you know what? I like the little things, like. Christian used to do, like, if you threw him towards the corner.
Yeah, and he does that corner.
He would kind of do that corner, like, spring over, and then there was, like, Tajiri would do the, what was it called, the tarantula.
Yeah, so, like, you like those variations.
He would grab you in the ropes and everything, but there's just something about, like, you can recover and hit a counter, but, like, when you're at the point where, like, you've fully fallen out of it, that you suddenly get this spring of life and you come back and hit them, and it happens to you in every fucking match that you have. I hate it.
Huh. See, because the way I see it, like,
it's the most cartoony goddamn.
Well, that's, I mean, we're watching something that's like a live cartoon. I mean, there is that element to wrestling.
I know, but, like, there's a difference between, like, the Dragon Ball Z cartoon and the Looney Tunes cartoon, and it's like Space Jam. Like, you have these broken ass characters fighting against these, like, supervillains and everything like that. Like, the supervillains are doing cool shit. I like the supervillains. I like the Monstars, but they can't keep up with Bugs Bunny being indestructible. Like.
I get to. Well, I don't know. I don't mind it. Just like I didn't really mind this match. I was actually scared for, like, the first, 5 minutes of the match?
I really
they
liked that they immediately did the Mick Foley opening that, like Dean came out. And
I was
like,
scared.
He's like, yeah, I'm climbing this right away.
Yeah, I was legitimately scared because, like, I can't remember the last time someone started the match on the top, like, you know, Mick Foley and Undertaker did. Like, usually, post-match celebrations take place on top of the cage. That's what I'm used to, or, like.
Or, you know, somebody broke out of the cage and right. Escaped, they climbed up there and everything, a la some of the other matches.
Right, like that, like, in the middle of the match, like, not starting the match the way Mick Foley and Undertaker did, because, like, I had immediate flashbacks to, like, oh my god, like, is somebody gonna fall? Or maybe so, not so much is somebody gonna fall, but, like, as much as you're trying to control the environment you're in for your performers, you can't predict certain things like gravity and weight and, you know, like, the wrong fall or something, you know, like, someone stumbling, like, you never know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they were on the edge, and I think it's the spot where Jamie Noble and Joey Mercury, Double J Security, where we're holding Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins attacks him, and then Dean Ambrose kind of, like, breaks free and starts beating them. And, like, I think, I can't remember if it was Noble or Joey Mercury who kind of oversold it and fell a little farther than I was comfortable. him falling. And I was like, oh my god, he's gonna die. And then I thought,
it was Joey Mercury. I'm gonna interrupt you for a second. It was Joey Mercury, and I know that for sure because I had the exact same feeling. And I thought, oh my god, he's gonna fall off. And the worst shit always happens to poor Joey Mercury.
Joey Mercury,
he got his face split in fucking half.
Yeah,
in that TLC match when he got kicked in the face with a ladder.
Mm-hmm. The one spot, the springboard spot.
Yeah, but go ahead and go back with what you're saying about.
So basically, falling. when that happened, I thought for sure someone was gonna fall. Like planned or not, a fall like that is gonna be. It's
insane.
Gonna hurt.
Insane. Yeah.
Now, when they did the spot where both of them were on the corner,
beautiful
each other,
spot, by the way.
Yeah, like I beautiful love. Spot. It was telegraphed. It was telegraphed. As soon as he grabbed his hair and hit him, and they stood on the middle of the cage division from the top to the bottom, and they looked I think one of them glanced over at the. Tables, and then, they did the spot, and Rollins kind of messed it up, or not Rollins, Ambrose. Ambrose messed it up because he hits Seth Rollins, releases, and, it looks like the impact of the cage killed Seth Rollins, and, then he falls. But, Dean Ambrose, for no reason, jumps out and, kills himself.
Yeah.
So it looked weird. It looked very strange.
Yeah, it didn't work that well in that aspect, but I kind of got it that they had both hit each other's head against the cage, so
right, so he
eventually
was
they're both giving out, they're gonna fall, and they land against it, and right. I loved the imagery of that, because they fell perfectly together, they crashed, they both crumpled up
mm-hmm.
into absolute hell.
Yo, those tables were destroyed, and then they had
and they weren't preset tables. You didn't have that bit where it's like, I'm gonna take off the little border, I'm gonna pull out
the monitors. They still had the monitors.
They had everything in there, and they just both smashed right through those things. Absolutely crazy, and still people were all like, oh, I wanted them to fall off the top of the cage. It's like, why the fuck do you want your wrestlers to die? Not everybody has to fall 25 feet. That was still a solid 10-foot drop.
Yeah, that's what I was telling. That's what I was telling someone. I was like, that was half the cage, but that was still above the turnbuckle. So that's just as
way
impressive.
Above the turnbuckle.
Yeah,
man.
That's just as impressive as when CM Punk did the table spot at WrestleMania. That's as impressive as when Shawn Michaels did the table spot at one of the WrestleManias.
I thought it was going to be more like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
When
Austin smashed McMahon's head, mm-hmm. and then McMahon fell back through the table.
Yeah, same thing.
But
it's
them
the same
both
spot.
Hitting each other. Them both hitting each other, and then they both fall. Just really drove it because I mean, in the Austin case, of course Austin's not gonna double out with McMahon
because they're not the same.
He's gonna crush McMahon every
time. I think for the inner Dragon Ball Mark and me, I love that they both fell at the same time because it was kinda like that double punch knockout thing.
It was them, knocking each other down and then you knew that they were both gonna get up. You knew they were both going to get up from it and everything and return to the match and have the actual fight. But what I was hoping is that they would come in, when they return to it, beat to hell, and then, go at it, fight each other, hit their moves, crush each other with a couple weapons and everything and have a full-on Hell in a Cell match and everything. Just no blood, which
right.
I don't think really takes away from the match.
We've had a couple of blood lately on WWE TV.
All hard way, though.
Yeah.
You can definitely tell that the blood that we see
on
the
least
TV
is not being
bladed.
It's no blades, yeah. But still, remember when people would do it hard way, and they would stop the match and have the doctors come out and clean it, and the referees had, these handkerchiefs where they would wipe them. They don't even do that anymore.
Well, their ruling is depending on the severity. If it's, the top of your head, they're going to stop the match. They're going to glue the head shut. But if it's you cut your forehead or you split your lip, I think you're talking about Orton split his lip a week ago. And it looked like he straight up like vampire ripped somebody's throat open. Yeah, the way the blood was rolling down him.
He looked like he had bladed. I was like, did he blade? He's gonna get fined, because I know they actually fine him for that.
Oh yeah, for sure. But I think it has to do with the fact that you can't glue somebody's mouth shut.
Right.
And everything, the top of your head, that's a dangerous spot to be bleeding from. So, so they'll take care of that, and they'll tie up whatever, but you can't, tie up your main wrestler's face in the middle of the match. So I think that's why they kind of have let that run on. Plus, I also have a feeling Orton's the kind of guy that if they tried pulling him aside, he would just push a medic away and then go.
Yeah, you're so stupid.
You're ruining everything.
Yeah, but I don't care about your doctor. You're stupid. And then RKO's him in real life.
Exactly. these two, they go back into it, and then it's just spot. Hit you with this kendo stick, hit you with this chair,
I forgot all about, he came with a kendo stick in a holder, like a katana holder or something, what?
Like he was the goddamn ninja of
he looked like straight up Casey Jones walking down.
He did look like Casey Jones. He's just gonna come in there, he's gonna be all like, alright, Gag Face, we're gonna do this. Casey Jones, I love man. That. I love that guy.
Yeah, Casey Jones is the man. But yeah, I didn't mind the match. I think because of how long...
It was too spotty. After the big fall, they should have came and, just really had at each other and just, beat each other.
Here's why I don't...
match, and then, spots in between. But there has to be something between the spots. It can't just go spot, and there was nothing to it for me.
Right, so the reason why I don't mind that it was kind of spotty, because, there was a little bits of, wrestling, but mostly it was, spot after spot after spot. Everything highly telegraphed, especially the stuff with the cinder blocks, which I know you hate. I know you hate the cinder block stuff, but I don't mind it in something like this, because this goes back to what I said about Randy Orton and Triple H. Remember their match where it was really personal, and they were like, I'm gonna kill you, you did this to my wife, and they have a match which is really technical, but it doesn't make sense from a storyline perspective. These people should be trying to kill each other. I know it's wrestling, but within the parameters of a Hell in a Cell, and considering what Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose have been through, and the fact that they haven't... Have they even had a proper match before this? A proper one-on-one?
No.
Right, so we've been waiting how long for them to get their hands on each other?
2 months? 3 months?
No, it's been longer than 3 months, dude.
Longer than
I think it's longer. Maybe. When was
four the betrayal at absolute
of,
most.
When was the betrayal of the Shield? That was after WrestleMania.
I want to say was June or July.
Yeah, so June, July, we're in November.
Yeah. So that's four or 5 months? Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. So them getting in a Hell in a Cell and having a proper technical match would have not worked.
I didn't want them to have a technical match, though. I just wanted them to have, some punches and kicks in to set up the spots. It just, the way that it felt to me was it was like, okay, we have to do this spot, and I'm going to push you through this, and then damn you, you bastard, I'm going to put you through that. And it was just pure spot-to-spot layout rather than having anything else in between it. It was just completely spot-to-spot.
Right.
And no, I'm going to hit you a few times so that you're dizzy enough for me to do this to you. Because, in reality, nobody's going to, just stand there and be able
to,
straight up, okay, you're just gonna all of a sudden flip me through a table? No, that's
I do agree that there were some spots like the when he was trying to set his head on the cinder blocks to do it just looked unnatural. I understand that, but I also understand that there's some suspension of disbelief and some of this stuff you have to buy into. I did like the table.
You know what? You actually just reminded me of something from the Orton Cena Hell in a Cell match. Hell with being scared when they were throwing cinder blocks at each other. When Cena tried to chuck the goddamn steps at Randy Orton, holy hell, that scene terrified me, man.
Yeah, he's been doing that the step throwing Like he's been doing that spot for a while now, and it's always impressive.
Like, with that little bit of room to be able to run around in and everything, like, Randy Orton, like, barely got out of the way of that thing. Like, that would have crushed him in half with the...
Yeah.
That was just such a spot, like, oh, don't fuck this up. Don't ricochet. Don't ricochet. Like,
yeah, for real.
Like, but yeah, they beat the hell out of each other, but it was just so spotty, and for the fact that I love that they got the close against each other,
mm-hmm.
You can't close a show on a goddamn run-in. Like, close your show with your clean win. They should have had Cena and Orton close just because of the fact that that one actually had a resolution to a match, so I can leave with, like, the match is done, rather than me leaving with, why the fuck is the lights out? Why is there a hologram?
My thing.
Why is Ray mad at Dean Ambrose?
Like, yeah, there you go. That's like, the only thing that bugs me about the end, because I didn't mind that there was like a weird voodoo ending, because it reminded me of like the Kane Hell in the Cell where he was introduced and like he came and like, you know, destroyed the cell, came in and like, I don't mind
chanting. I thought we were gonna like see like a dude holding Dean Ambrose's heart as like Dean Ambrose is standing there being like, hot man this.
Yeah. But yeah, like I don't mind the ending. I don't mind the overbooking, especially since it helps everyone, and I'll tell you why it helps everyone. But I don't think I care that it was Bray Wyatt, because there has never been, other than when the Shield went against the Wyatt family, there has never been like a relationship between Bray Wyatt and anyone from the Shield.
Mm-hmm.
Since that feud, so like it made no sense to me, and I think they're still trying to explain why he got involved.
Okay,
but like I don't. That's the only reason why I don't like it.
It's
that being said,
something about Dean Ambrose did something to Sister Abigail. Like, we're eventually gonna get the background on this Sister Abigail deal,
and hopefully get like someone from NXT to take the role.
I don't want Sister Abigail to be an actual person. I want Sister Abigail to be a Norman Bates situation.
Oh, where he's like, a man. Oh, like it's him. And
like,
drag.
Like, not the drag thing, but just where like Bray thinks that there is Sister Abigail.
Why not, instead of you said Psycho, right?
Yeah.
Why not go the Fight Club route, which is very similar,
where he is.
He is Sister Abigail.
I just don't want to see Bray Wyatt drag.
But you don't have to put him in drag. Like, just have him believe it. Like, because remember, like Edward Norton didn't dress as Tyler. Like that never happened. Like, he never.
I'll tell you this: I still don't completely understand
Fight Club.
So I don't even want to get into this.
All right.
Because there's so much to it.
It's too much.
And I want to finish up Hell in a Cell and do our match of the week.
All right.
So that we have a nice close to our show. But but we'll talk about Fight Club sometime in the future here. But
Movies that we don't understand, part one.
Movies we don't understand, part one. Everything. It'll be just a really long thing of me saying why I don't understand Fight Club.
Or other movies.
There's a lot of movies I don't understand. I don't understand why people like Maleficent, but we already talked about that one.
I love that movie.
Anyways, we have we had Bray run in, and that cost Dean Ambrose the win. Kind of a somber ending for that one and everything. After everything that had happened, Seth Rollins, you know, gets away. But it's paying off really well. There's a lot of stuff going for Rollins versus Orton for the future. Still have the Rollins versus Ambrose. You have Ambrose, Bray Wyatt. You have John Cena, you know, versus the Authority, versus Lesnar. All sorts of things that are coming up. So it's looking pretty good forward. To close off our show, we're going to have our classic match of the week. We're going to take it back, kind of in celebration of the fact that Rusev is the new U.S. champion. He has beaten Sheamus for the title.
Rusev Bratka.
Crush. We're going to talk about the Iron Sheik beating Bob Backlund for the WWF title in 1983, kind of the end of an era, the end of that classic wrestling right before the birth of Hulkamania. If it wasn't for Iron Sheik as that transitional champion, Hulkamania couldn't have started the way that it did.
Yep.
Just a pure physical tour de force between the two men. It appears like there's only about 3 minutes left of it. You can find it on WWE.com. It's Bob Backlund versus the Iron Sheik. You'll be able to watch it and everything. You can see Classy Freddy Bassey and his, you know, Ayatollah-type gimmick screaming instructions to Iron Sheik the entirety of the match. Iron Sheik puts the camel clutch onto Bob Backlund, but Bob Backlund will not submit. He ends up passing out while in the role, and his manager, Arnold Scollin, throws in the towel, costing him the belt.
Which would be considered kind of like a... Not quite a run-in these days, but it would. I imagine a pay-per-view ending like that nowadays wouldn't fly.
I think it would fly better than the Bray Wyatt run-in ending. I mean,
No. I'm talking about not so much run-ins, but I'm talking about like in an example where like someone gets disqualified and that's the ending. Like the heel gets disqualified and like keeps the title, you know, like how that happened a couple of times, and people are never happy with those sort of endings.
But I mean, the hero not giving in, the hero passing out instead. I mean, there's all sorts of classics that follow that aspect. I mean, Austin wouldn't tap out; he passed out to Bret Hart in WrestleMania 13. I remember Chris Benoit; he passed out in the Walls of Jericho. Mm-hmm. Other than tapping out, a few other examples.
I think some would say that the Steve Austin example would be like an example of like how to make a classic double turn without actually trying to do a double turn with a match ending that, you know, like again would be considered in other situations, like in less iconic situations, it would be considered like a spotty ending.
Gotcha. But I mean, for this match as it was and everything, it was 83, huge heat on Iron Sheik. This is, you know, in that classic era of wrestling, a lot of people probably still thought it was kind of real and everything.
Oh, everyone, let's not kid ourselves. This was the 80s.
That's true.
Everyone thought that shit was real.
Yeah, tons of hate on the Iron Sheik and everything. Iron Sheik would come out to the match and, you know, have the announcer, you know, ask that the audience refrains from chanting USA, building up genius heat on him, doing his prayer work, and then he goes in, he faces off against Bob Backlund, ends up putting him into the camel clutch and Arnold Scollin throws in the towel. And it wasn't for 10 years later that you actually got payoff of Bob Backlund freaking out on Arnold Scollin about throwing in the towel. 10 yeah. years later, insane Mr. Backlund came back and started wrestling. But yeah, Bob Backlund, he was a hero, 6-year champion, the second longest title reign of all time, for one single reign, second longest behind, Bruno Sammartino. So, champion, loses in sketchy circumstances against, you know, a huge foreign heel, all of that so that it can, you know, give way to Hulkamania coming in and being the new champion. So very iconic moment, very interesting setup for it, and that's the match of the week.
And again, it was such a, like, the match itself wasn't like great. It was really like the theatrics of it, mm-hmm. and also the effect it had on wrestling, because without that match existing, you know, like you said, there wouldn't have been a WrestleMania. Like how long after that was it?
WrestleMania, the first one was in 1985.
Or Hulkamania, sorry.
Hulkamania like, started 1 month later.
1 month later, so...
It was December 26, 1983, that Iron Sheik beat Bob Backlund for the title. Mm-hmm. It was late January 1984. So it was exactly 1 month later that Hulk Hogan beat him for this.
Yeah, and there's no way that could have happened. Like, Hulkamania would have not been born if the champion was Bob Backlund. There's no way.
No.
Like, there's just no way.
Yeah,
like,
because there would have been there would have been those old school fans who still did like Bob Backlund that weren't quite changing the times yet, that would have hated Hulk Hogan for taking it from Backlund. But everybody hated Sheik. And, you know, even Hogan said, you know, Sheik doing him the favor of giving him that title propelled him the way nothing else could have.
Oh, yeah. There was no way.
I mean, there was no bigger moment for Hulk Hogan until he slammed Andre.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And that was oh, my God, that was what, a full 2 championships after
three,
the fact?
3 years later?
Yeah, oh my God.
Yeah, because he was champ from 84 to 88, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It's when he lost the championship at Main Event to Andre.
That's right. And then Andre then in turn gave it to
DiBiase.
And then
Gorilla Monsoon. Jack Tunney came out and coughed on everybody and said, no, no title for you.
The tournament of the ages.
fantastic. Classic wrestling.
Right.
Thank you for joining us again. I am Sign of Flame.
And I am Sir Hyde Regan.
Have a great night.
You.